Hi, this is Andre Dawson, and you're listening to Ryan and Chad on the Friendly Confines podcast.
Chad, as we always like to say, nobody gets better guests than us here on the Friendly Confines. And man, you caught a whale for this one. Such an interesting interview that we have in this special edition of the Friendly Confines this week.
So we're going to preview this for like 40 seconds and get right into it. But Rhino, I mean, the connections to Charlie Grimm, one of the winningest coaches in Cubs history, the godson of Jack Brickhouse with the most notable voices in Chicago sports history, Scott Simon from NPR's Weekend Edition, also a special contributor, a prolific author, a couple of baseball books, one of them a Cubs book. What do you like most about this interview you're about ready to hear?
I just thought the stories were so tremendous. Yeah. I mean, learning about the fact that he was Jack Brickhouse's godson, learning the fact that he was the nephew of Charlie Grimm. I mean, that's history right there. And he wrote a terrific book about the Cubs, which I know you own as well. So I'm really excited to hear more of Scott's interview with you. And we will go to that right now, as here is Scott Simon from NPR Radio and CBS Sunday Morning in this special edition of The Friendly Confines.
I always like to ask this question because this is a Cubs podcast, but I always like to just kind of, you know, start off with kind of the foundation. What made you a Cubs fan? Obviously proximity, where you grew up in Chicago, but what was it that made you fall in love with this team?
Well, I think certainly proximity and the special kind of intimacy that you can feel on the north side of Chicago with the Cubs. I mean, both in my grade school and in high school, Senn High School on the north side, when the windows were open during the spring and the fall, we could hear the crowd at Wrigley Field if there was a home run. And, you know, coming home, taking the L home from high school, from Senn High School, you know, I was a transfer student. You would pass Addison. And given the fact that we got out of school 3:15, 3:30, often the W or L was up by the time the train was passing, the train was pulling in, and the crowd, if we can call it a crowd in those days, would be, would be getting on. And you could tell, you know, obviously immediately you didn't need to see the flag, but just by the disposition of the people who were getting on the train. And I still think there is a kind of intimate relationship between Cub fans on the north side, and not just the north side, with the team, that is utterly unique. And I, you know, maybe it exists in Boston. After that, I'd be hard pressed. You know, it's a neighborhood ballpark. It's in the warp and the weft of the city. I just think Cub fans feel differently about the franchise. It's kind of the intimacy. Now, I had, as it also happened, some personal relations. My Auntie Marion was married to Charlie Grimm, the old Cub first baseman and manager, who was in that pretty famous Norman Rockwell picture called The Dugout, where you have a bunch of Cubs sitting on the bench looking absolutely baleful, including, by the way, the bat boy, at something mortifying that has happened on the field. And of course, my godfather was Jack Brickhouse, the longtime Cubs announcer. So, you know, and it occurred. So, I mean, I had told you about a White Sox fan who almost ran me over in the streets of Washington, D.C. today. A few minutes before that, my daughter and I had been sitting at an outdoor cafe, and I had my Cubs hat on and a Cubs jacket. And I don't always dress like a Cubs nerd, but I mean, I had to accompany my daughter to a, you know, to, in fact, to get her second vaccination. And I just threw stuff on over my gym clothes and it's a little chilly. So we were sitting there at this outdoor cafe and a guy passed me and he said, "Hey, Mr. Cub." I know what he meant. I'm not Ernie Banks. But in any event, you know, he said, "Hey, Mr. Cub." And I said, "Hey, hey." It was our oldest daughter who said, "Isn't that what Uncle Jack said?" And I said, "Yes, you're absolutely right, baby. That's what Uncle Jack said." Can I tell you a story about Uncle Jack?
And I'm definitely going to ask you about Jack. So please tell me about Uncle Jack. I want to hear that.
Okay. So as it turned out, I had told Uncle Jack a few years ago, we were talking about Hey Hey. We were having a drink. And in any event, I said, "I've got to tell you, I met a woman in New York who said that she can tell when a man has grown up in Chicago, if at the, what I'll delicately call even on a podcast, the highest moment of romantic fruition, they shout out, Hey, Hey." and Uncle Jack thought that was like the, you know, greatest gratification of his life's work that he had ever heard. And as it turned out, the last time I saw Uncle Jack was in 1998 at my stepfather's memorial service. And it turned out to be actually just 10 days before Jack himself died. I will add, forgive all these parentheticals. Yeah, you know, his health had been tender anyway. Yeah. And a few weeks before, I'd called him when he was at Northwestern Hospital because he had had essentially a stroke while he was getting, why am I telling this story? He was getting dressed for Harry Carey's funeral.
Oh my gosh.
And I said to him, I called him in the hospital. My mother called and said, "Jack's in the hospital." And I called him and he said, "Hi there." And he said, I guess I just got a little too excited dressing for Harry's funeral." And they had a delicate friendship. In any event, I like to think Harry would have said the same thing. In any event, so the last time I saw him, I didn't know it would be the last time I saw him, but it was at my stepfather's memorial service. And, you know, he was leaving and we leaned over to hug and kiss each other. And he just held me next to him and he whispered into my ear, "You keep saying, Hey, Hey, kid, you keep saying, Hey, Hey," which was a reference to that. Yeah. Oh, so sorry, I've gone on too much already,
Jack. No, not at all. And that's a great story. And that our listeners are going to love that. I want to ask you a little bit more about Jack in a bit, but your love affair with Wrigley Field, tell me about what that place means to you. And obviously you haven't been back in almost 2 years now with COVID. You're coming back this summer. What's that place mean to you? And what are you looking forward to when you get back there?
Oh, I mean, it is, we all have these parts, you know, in life that are important to us. The night that I was going to propose to my wife, I was going to pick her up at O'Hare. I was going to meet her at O'Hare. And we were going to stop at Wrigley Field and I was going to pop the question there. Wow. Now, as it turned out, her plane didn't land that night from New York because of bad weather. So, you know, that plan had to be undone. And so the next day we were, she was coming to Chicago to meet me. There was I think it was the International Booksellers Association convention, or whatever it's called. And in any event, so she was meeting me there, big event. I think she knew I was going to, you know, ask her to marry me. It was not long. I mean, this was within 2 weeks after we met in New York, by the way. It was a very quick courtship, but to say the least. But in any event, so my plans to ask her at Wrigley Field were, you know, washed out because she didn't come in that night. She came in the next morning, met me at McCormick Place at the convention at the booksellers convention. And then I decided we got into a cab at McCormick Place. My wife is French. And I thought I would ask her to marry me in front of the plaque on the North Michigan Avenue Bridge, which marks where Per Marquette first came to Chicago. You know, I figured a friend Chicago connection. And in any event, we get into the cab. It's the early afternoon. The Cub game is on the radio. And she can tell I'm a little nervous. She kind of knows what's going to happen. And in any event, Cub game is on. And I turn to her and I go, "Hey, the Cubs are up 2-1. And she goes, "My God, I can't believe it. You are actually listening to the game. You're actually listening to the game." In any event, Wrigley Field is just, I mean, I honestly, I can't think of another you know, public building that's as important to me, that contains as many happy memories of being there as a fan, just being there with my father, being there with Uncle Jack, being there with my mother, my Auntie Marion, in recent years being there with my my own family and my children. And when Charlie Grimm had been married to my Auntie Marion, and when Uncle Charlie died, Auntie Marion reminded the Tribune, who then owned the club, that Mr. Wrigley had promised that Charlie could have his ashes scattered along the first base line. And the Tribune, the club, just didn't want to hear this. But, you know, they said, look, if we let everybody who wanted to have their ashes scattered along the first base line be buried, the place would be awash in crematorium ashes. And they said, we just can't let this be done. And on top of everything else, they said, you know, some of our players have religious objections and not, you know. My Auntie Marion was a very determined woman, and she persisted. So when the Cubs were at spring training in Arizona, I got a call one night. Auntie Marion, come to Wrigley Field tomorrow at 11, you know, and she was able to scatter Uncle Charlie's ashes along first base. And by the way, to this day, in our family, if there's like a close play at first base, if there's a runner on first, and the pitcher is trying, you know, and they fall, we say he gets up with a pocket full of Uncle Charlie. in any event, I do know that Steve Goodman figured out a way to have his ashes scattered at Wrigley Field. And let's just put it this way. My daughters know where they're going to put me. Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
We have the row, we have the seats.
Yeah.
And they're endlessly resourceful when the time comes, which I hope is no time soon. They'll know what to do.
We'll be right back with Scott Simon after this. It's time for the Golden Cubs Fun Fact of the Week, brought to you by our partners at Golden Rule Entertainment. It wasn't until 1988 that the Chicago Cubs had lights put in at Wrigley Field. The date of that first night game was 8-8-88 versus the Philadelphia Phillies. However, the game was rained out, and it wasn't until the following day, on August 9th, 1988, that was officially recorded as the first night game at Wrigley Field. The Cubs won 6-4 over the New York Mets. And that's your Golden Cubs Fun Fact of the Week, brought to you by Golden Rule Entertainment, offering big league opportunities while owning a piece of a minor league style ball club. To find out more information about how you can become an owner, go to www.goldenruleentertainment.com. And now back to our interview with Scott Simon.
Having Jack Brickhouse as a godfather, you'd share that story, but I mean, that I you probably didn't realize that when you were a kid. I mean, that just seemed.
It was, oh no!
Real. What were some of those moments like when you were a kid, and the times that it hit you? Like, I've got kind of a special godfather.
My father would often take me to the game, and I remember meeting Stan Musial when I was a kid. And I remember, without quite knowing how big Stan Musial was, because he was so nice. You know, there were a lot of players who would say, hello, hey, how you doing, kid? But he was genuinely nice. You know, I mean, he leaned over, talked to me. It was absolutely great. And it wasn't until I got, you know, older, it's the kind of thing my children went through a period where they think that, you know, everybody's kid is on radio and television and writes books. And then they, at some point they realize that it's, just kind of something, you know, they're not impressed by it still, but in any event, it just, you know, and I think it was, I was getting older, I would understand that, you know, cause look, I loved Uncle Jack and I thought he was a great announcer, but I mean, we all imitated Uncle Jack.
Yeah.
And my imitation was no better than anybody else's. But I mean, that's who you imitated growing up as a kid, was Uncle Jack, because he was the Cubs announcer. I also, you know, my father died when I was 16, and he had lots of problems before that. And it became, particularly after my father died, Jack really took his godfather responsibility seriously. Even more so than before, to be present in my life. And it was very common for me to, if the game was still in progress, when I would take the L pass there on Addison, I would just get off impulsively. And I would present myself at, I think it was gate 43, and they would call up to the booth. There was a guy named Jack Rosenberg, and I would go up the steps past the Andy Frayne ushers, and I would sit there in the booth for the last inning or two or whatever, extra innings, and then I'd go with him. He would have more than a drink at the Pink Poodle, which was a lounge that they had in those days. And, you know, I mean, Leo DeRocher would come in there and have more than a drink. They also had complicated thoughts about each other. What can I tell you? He didn't think he thought, particularly in 1969, he thought Leo just ran the team ragged too much early in the year. But I digress again. And it was very important for Jack to be present in my life at that particular point. He loved my father, but he understood my father had a drinking problem. And he understood the ways in which my father, you know, I both missed my father, and I think to those of us who've lost our fathers at an early age, we both miss them and love them and are a little angry that they left us. You know, and a lot of that boils over, and he knew exactly how to read that. And I think he was wonderful with me. Absolutely wonderful.
I love that. Thank you for that story. I can't imagine what that'd be like just to sit alongside Jack Brickhouse for the last couple of innings for so many games. That's gotta be amazing. So when you think about the moments that made you a Cubs fan, we talked about that on the front end, but when you think about, you know, that park has a lot to do with it, the team and the characters, but there wasn't a lot of success during your lifetime, really, until the last
year. No, you know, absolutely not. And that devastating 1969 season and the loss to the Mets. And then in some ways, the 1970 season was even more devastating, because the first year you thought, well, you know, it's still a great team. It is still, say for the 2016 World Series team, I think one of the great teams of all time. I mean, look at that lineup, you know, I mean, Fergie Jenkins, Kenny Holtzman, you know, Beckert, Kessinger, I could go on, Randy Hundley, you know, Ernie Banks, one of his last great productive years, the great Billy Williams, Jim Hickman had a hell of a year. I mean, I could go on. Yeah. In any event, a great team that just fell short. In many ways, 1970 was even more devastating, because it, you know, that's when you understood that team probably wouldn't make it after those kinds of two disappointments. You know, and it became part of the character, I think, of the team, you know, nursing that disappointment. And I think in some ways we became a little too proud of it. I mean, I remember talking to Michael Lewis, who wrote Moneyball and many great books, at this particular point, where he said that he thought part of what happened is the Cubs, despite their record on the field, became one of the most successful franchises in baseball. And he said, therefore, what motive did they have to really win anything when they were making just about as much money as they could, by losing? And particularly when they became, you know, not sure proud, but became comfortable with that stamp of lovable losers. And so I was... I think there's something to that. And I was very glad when the Ricketts family came in and, you know, and clearly had a dedication to doing something else, because there was absolutely every reason for the Cubs to be not the Yankees, but to be like the Red Sox, to be like the Dodgers, to win a lot, to be champions a lot. You know, they have the market, they have the backing, they have the... I think particular ability to get great players, you know, which because I think there is that indefinable ingredient. If a great player a promising young player is presented, you know, if the money is about equal, well, really, where do you want to be? You know, because you're, as so many players have said to me over the years, you were never a star the way you are a star on the north side of Chicago. And I think that's absolutely true.
When we had George Will on maybe 2 months ago, he had shared his hatred for lovable losers. He just said it just allowed people to say, okay, because you've embraced that,
yeah,
we're supposed to embrace that, and that I think that speaks to it. But we're in a different time now, so put on your Cubs fan hat now, and I literally do.
Yeah.
And tell me how you're feeling about this 2021 season, about all the storylines. What are you thinking?
I'm feeling pretty good about this season. Let me knock wood. You know, as I'm speaking with you this week, we're two games. Forgive me for saying we. I actually don't play for the team. You know, I sometimes have to make that plain to people. We're two games out, which I think lots of people, myself included, didn't think would be possible at this particular point. You know, Chris Bryant is playing the way I wish he had last year, the year before. And I think just a lot of good things are coming together. And I'm, you know, I think it could be really a great year. It's very interesting to me. I think, you know, we're big Rizzo fans in our household. We love Rizzo. I mean, we love them all, but I mean, oh, and Contreras we love, and I could go on, and Javi, in my current novel, which is the only YA novel I've ever written, called Sunnyside Plaza, which is set there on the north side, on Sunnyside, which is a street just a block north of Wilson Avenue, I actually have a character named after Javi Baez. He's a 13-year-old boy, and I named him Javi. But there are two scenes at a Cubs game. I'm feeling pretty good about the season. I mean, I don't want to jinx anything, absolutely not. But I think they are playing beyond expectation at this particular point. And you know, Kyle Hendricks, good season. I mean, I think there are a lot of good possibilities that could be over the horizon. And I think David Ross is getting the hang of this managing thing. I think that's good. And I'm happy he has a new girlfriend, and you know, according to reports. I'm feeling pretty good about the season right now.
What is last question?
You're hearing our dog bark in the back. Sorry, yes.
That's okay.
See, I've got one too. Our dog agrees. Daisy agrees.
Yes. Well, I'll leave you with this question. What is, when you think about walking back into Wrigley Field later on this summer with your family, what is that going to mean to you?
Oh, I'm undoubtedly going to cry. I'm undoubtedly going to cry. I mean, I think we can forget, you know, when this whole pandemic hit last year, my wife is French. We spend a few weeks out of every year in France. We had the trip of a lifetime planned. We were going to fly to London, see the two game series that the Cubs were going to play against the Cardinals in Wembley Stadium, and then go on to France. And I mean, we had invited, you know, friends in London and friends in France for that matter. And, you know, I mean, this was going to be one of the big, you know, moments of our fandom, of our lifetimes, really, to be able to be in Wembley Stadium and, you know, and to watch the Cubs and, you know, to kind of be ambassadors for the Cubs around, you know, around our foreign friends. Well, you know, I remember when the lockdown occurred, ka-thunk. We at that point, we just didn't know how long it would exist, you know. And so for, I think, a couple of weeks, we felt, well, maybe the game will still go on. And then, of course, I think it was obviously clear that the season wouldn't take place. And, you know, certainly that game had to be canceled. Hasn't been rescheduled. And then we went through a period where we didn't know how long this would last. I mean, I think we have to remember last summer, you know, people were racing to develop a vaccine, but there was no assurance that anything would happen. So we, you know, we, we didn't know. We just didn't know. So to be able to go back and, you know, to share it with our children is going to be just overwhelmingly emotional for me. And to, you know, to be back in the north side of Chicago and to be in that stadium, to be in those seats and to look out on the field once again, will just mean the world to us.
And once again, our special thanks to Scott Simon. You can find him on Twitter. He's got about 1 million followers. He puts out a ton of content on Twitter. He's very entertaining. He's just a really smart dude. He's as big as a Cub fan as they come. He's got so many great stories. And you can find it in NPR, Scott Simon, on Twitter. You can find Ryan at Ryan D. Lieber. You can find me at The Chad Gordon. Ryan, I love that interview. Just a lot of great stories. And one of the favorite things we've talked about doing this podcast, A, we get tremendous listeners and we've got really, really dedicated listeners on a week in, week out basis. But the people that we get to talk to is so, so fun.
Oh, absolutely. And they take the time to join us and they really share some awesome, awesome insight about the Cubs, about their experience, and just about their love for the baseball team that you and I have the same love for as well. So we appreciate Scott Simon taking the time to join us, and that was really a lot of fun. So that is going to wrap things up on this special edition of the Friendly Confines. Once again, our thanks to Scott Simon from NPR Radio and CBS Sunday Morning. For Chad, I'm Ryan. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. Have a good one.
See you at the ballpark.
Don't let anyone say that it's just a game, for I've seen other teams and it's never the same. When you're born in Chicago, you're blessed and you're healed. The first time you walk into a